Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today I'm looking forward to our show because it's something that I'm very much interested in. You know, I think we all have realized that healthcare is not what it used to be. And one of the most important things we can do is take care of our health. And what we eat really matters. I think the euphemism of you are what you eat is very important. And today we're going to speak with somebody who can speak to that and give us guidelines. And, you know, I always figured and thought food is a medicine. And I think we need to be very, very think about what we're putting in our mouths. It's not just what we see on TV anymore. So today I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Sina McCullough. She is an expert in disease reversal, functional medicine, and energy medicine, as well as a certified natural healer, master herbalist, gluten-free society practitioner, and Reiki master. Dr. McCullough nearly died from an autoimmune disease, but was able to fully reverse the disease without the use of medication. Now she's dedicated to helping others find their second chance. She's the creator of the online program Go Wild, How I Reverse Chronic and Autoimmune Disease, which she teaches people how to reverse any chronic or autoimmune disease in a step-by-step manner. She's an international author of Hands Off My Food and Beyond Labels, which was co-authored with Joe Salatin from Polyface Farm. She's the co-host and co-producer of the Beyond Labels podcast, along with Mr. Salatin. She also hosts a cooking show titled Easy Peasy Cooking with Dr. Sina and writes for the Epoch Times. She earned her PhD in nutrition and a BS in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior with a minor in exercise physiology from University of California at Davis. She also taught biochemistry and bioenergetics at UC Davis. Dr. McCullough was the director of research and development for a nutraceutical company before becoming a homeschool mom and starting her own company that focuses on helping people harness their God-given ability to heal themselves. And that's what this show is really about, Dr. McCullough. It's about being a solution. We know what the problems are, and I think we're going to be speaking to them to some degree, but I'm really excited to really delve into and pick your brain on what we can do to make positive choices so that we can help our bodies heal. Because as a physician, I'm a little out there probably, but I do believe that the body's self-healing, and it's not about pharmaceuticals. So I want to welcome you to the show. It's an absolute pleasure to speak with you.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here with you.
I think this is going to be just a rip-roaring show. So let's get started, because like most people, people come to things when they're in extremis. And your story is really fascinating. I mean, as a physician, we deal with autoimmune diseases all the time, but we don't really have anything medically speaking to help people. What happened with your, you know, how'd you come to this?
Oh, that's an excellent question. So mine is a long story, which I'll try to condense. I basically was sick since I was a child. You know, like many people, I was born with already having some GI issues. I couldn't tolerate milk very well. And it progressed into chronic ear infections. I was a very irritable child. They probably would have put me on medications had I been a child now. It progressed into severe gastrointestinal distress in my early 20s while I was in college. And I sought medical help from Western doctors the entire time, for over 20 years, in fact. They diagnosed me initially with irritable bowel syndrome, which, as you know, is just a catch-all group. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to consume a prescription medication, Tagamet, before every single meal. And right then and there, even though I was in my early 20s, I knew that a prescription medication would not solve the problem. You know, I wanted to figure out what was the root cause. So I bounced from one doctor to the next, like one GI specialist to the next, and nobody could help me. They all just wanted me to take the medication and, you know, basically leave the office. So I just pursued. I pursued trying to find an answer. Like I said, for over 20 years, I went to countless Western medicine doctors, all different specialties, I had so many tests done. I just lost count. I even had, I had sigmoidoscopies, colonoscopies, breath tests, urine tests, fecal tests. I even had exploratory surgery at one point, and nobody really found anything wrong. And so finally, my last appointment with a specialist, he said to me that my symptoms had to be in my head because they couldn't find anything wrong. So in other words, I knew at that point, if I had any hope of healing, I was going to have to find my own solution. So that's exactly what I did. I, in essence, became an investigative journalist, and I took a deep dive into our food supply. I figured that my symptoms were directly related to the food I was eating because I could have severe gastrointestinal distress within 20 minutes of eating certain foods. So I knew intuitively that my illness was connected to, in large part, to our food supply. So I did a deep dive into the food supply. It took about 5 years to uncover a lot of very disturbing information. You know, I had blindly trusted the food supply up to that point. I figured that, you know, we have the entire Food and Drug Administration and the USDA paid with our tax dollars to, according to their website, make sure that our food is safe for us to eat. And I trusted that. So I would walk into a grocery store, for instance, and I would trust that every food item in that grocery store must have been tested for safety. And I came to find out that is not the case. Fortunately for me, I was able to do this deep dive while I still had enough cognitive ability. You know, I ended up developing severe brain fog. You know, the whole 20 years while I was searching for my answers, I kept accumulating more and more symptoms, which, you know, this is a hallmark of being on the autoimmune continuum. So even though it started with, you know, the ear infections as a child to then gastrointestinal issues, it progressed to, you know, chronic sinus infections. Like I said, the severe brain fog. I had 5 miscarriages. I had a tumor on my eye, in the white portion of my eye. They couldn't figure out why I had the tumor. They wanted to just give me medication to try to decrease the inflammation, but they said it would eventually grow over my cornea and blind me. So I just, you know, many food sensitivities, right? I tried diet elimination, reintroduction, and it was like, as soon as I figured out the foods that I could eat, then one of those foods would turn on me. And these were foods that we think of as healthy, like apples, you know, or chicken. I wasn't able to eat these quote unquote healthy foods. And it got to the point where my list of foods that I could eat was like a half a sheet of paper. So it was a very dire situation for me. I started muscle wasting like a cancer patient can experience. And that's the point where we just knew that if I couldn't figure this out and reverse this quickly, that I was going to die. It turns out, so that's actually the point where I just surrendered. I just surrendered everything over to God. I remember laying on the bed, just in tears. I mean, even now, the emotions are coming to the surface. And I just remember praying to him and saying, you know, I've tried everything that I can think of. I've utilized every single resource, all my training, all my experience. I can't figure this out, but I don't want my children to grow up without mothers. So if you could please help me, save me, then I will dedicate the rest of my life to help others find their second chance. And the next day, he showed me a different path. And I ended up figuring out that I had nutrient deficiencies, 15 different nutrient deficiencies, even though Western tests showed that I had no nutrient deficiencies. I was borderline for both pellagra and beriberi, which, as you know, both of those diseases were eradicated in the U.S. at least by the mid-1900s, and they both can lead to death. I had severe leaky gut. I had arsenic poisoning. In an advanced stage of an autoimmune disease, it was rheumatoid arthritis, where I couldn't even wrap my hand around a cup. It hurt so badly, I couldn't stand up long enough to do the dishes. When I tried to breathe, it felt like my ribs were going to break. I was basically on my deathbed. But like I said, fortunately, he showed me a path. part of that path was figuring out what's in our food and what was making me sick. And I'm thrilled to say that it's been over 6 years now, and I am still completely disease-free. I am not in quote unquote remission, like Western medicine likes to claim. I'm absolutely free of all markers and all indications of disease.
That's amazing. I think I'd like to take our first break because that story was just, I mean, it makes my hair stand on end that you went through all of that and you came out the other side, and you are a testament to the power of God and the power of the body to heal itself. So let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Sina McCullough, and what the story that she just relayed is, it speaks a lot to me. I'm an ear, nose, and throat doctor. And when I was seeing children, the amount of children with ear infections and huge tonsils and adenoids, and the story that usually presented itself underneath when you took the history was they couldn't tolerate their diet. You know, they couldn't tolerate milk. Their GI tract was affected. And what you're describing, I mean, our body is it's amazing. But to me, the GI tract is the crux of everything, right? The immune system, 70% of the immune system's in the gut. How we take our foods in and feed ourselves and nutrition is all through the gut. And you described something I think that it's very important for people to understand. What you eat can either be a help or a hindrance. And I trusted the food industry as myself for a while. Let's talk about the food and the quality of food, because you mentioned that, and I think that's really the most important thing. When we see GMO-free and we see organic, can we trust those labels?
That's a great question. So let's start with organic. So organic, I'll have to say, the organic label is better than if you walked into the grocery store and you chose the conventional food. All right, that is a step up, meaning when you choose organic, overall, you have lowered the toxic burden on your body. All right. And that's because with organic foods versus conventional foods, the organic regulations don't allow for the spraying of most pesticides and herbicides, for instance, you know, in the produce. They don't allow for GMO seeds to be used. They also don't allow for things like sewage sludge to be used in the soil, which is quite disgusting, but that does actually occur in some conventional crops. So those are things that are not allowed in the produce. In terms of the meat, the animals, for instance, would not be able to be allowed to consume GMO feed. They wouldn't be able to consume feed that's been sprayed with most herbicides or pesticides. They aren't allowed to be administered most antibiotics. So there is less of a toxic burden when you simply switch from conventional to organic. Now, organic does have loopholes. One thing you have to look out for is that there's different levels of organic according to the government's own regulations. So you'd want to look for a product that says 100% organic. Because unless it's 100% organic, they can have, like there's 95% organic, for instance, or 70% of the food is organic. So there's different definitions actually in the government registry on what organic actually means. So you go to organic and you make sure it's 100% organic. Now, in addition to that kind of, you know, labeling complexity, there are loopholes. I think of the organic label as like a bucket filled with water. And each time that I lost trust in that label, that bucket would spring a leak. And I would try to patch up that hole in the bucket, right? So I could still have some kind of trust in the food that I was picking up from the grocery store. Mm-hmm. One of the issues with the organic label is that they don't actually test the product for instance, GMOs. So according to the USDA themselves, they've said that the certifying agent will just review the ingredient purchases and production records. In other words, The organic certification for a farm, for instance, hinges largely on reviewing paperwork. So that's fine if you know the farmer, right? But if you go to your grocery store, you usually don't know the farmer who produced that food. So there's no testing of the farm. There's no testing of the final product, right, of the individual product. So the problem is, how do you actually know that those processed foods, for instance, that are carrying that USDA label, how do you know that they're actually GMO free? So you don't. And so that's why when I go into the grocery store, if I'm buying something, I look for the 100% organic label, and I look for the non-GMO verification label, because that's the third party that actually does test the individual ingredients and the final product to make sure that there's no GMOs in it. All right. So you see already how complex the system is, right? We're now, I'm now having to look for a label, and I'm having to patch up that hole, you know, the loophole from that label with another label. And then there's a, then I realize there's another loophole in the USDA organic label, and that's when it comes to glyphosate. So the organic seal, the USDA organic seal to that label, technically prohibits the use of glyphosate. But not all farms are actually tested for the presence of glyphosate. So just like with GMOs, the certifying agent, if they want, they can request testing during the certification process. But once again, that certification process for glyphosate presence is largely based on paperwork. And I contacted the National Organic Program, and they actually told me that most certifiers do never test for glyphosate. So in the, they once these farms are actually certified as organic, only about 5% of the farms each year are actually tested for pesticide residues. And that doesn't always include glyphosate. So, and then also the final food products that are coming from these farms or that are processed are not required to be tested either. The only exception is when a certifying agent asks for the testing. But again, that is the rare exception, not the rule. So again, how do we know if glyphosate is really in those organic labeled foods? And the way I know is that I pair the USDA 100% label with that non-GMO label, and then with the glyphosate residue-free label, which is it's from another third-party organization, the Detox Project, and they actually do test every ingredient and the final product, which it's really important to test the final product and not just see each ingredient, because each ingredient itself can have just a small amount of residue in it, but then when it's combined into one product, that can actually be a larger quantity. And if we're not testing the final product, we're missing it. So both of these third-party organizations, independent organizations, test for the final product. So that's just one example of how complicated even the USDA's own organic label truly is.
I had no idea it was that complex. I mean, you think you're doing a good thing, but you really trust no one. That's the moral of the story. You really have to do your own due diligence. And, you know, for those people who don't know what glyphosate is, it's Roundup, right? It's a weed killer, and it's what they use to, when they grow the food, to keep the weeds at bay. But I understand too that they change, like for wheat, for example, when they use it in the seeds, but it's become resistant, so there's still weeds growing, but they spray it again after it's harvest. Is that correct? Because that means there's more Roundup or glyphosate than you would expect as it was in the past, right?
Yes, that's absolutely true. So glyphosate is one of the active components in different pesticides, or, you know, what you can call herbicides, such as Roundup, right? So it's just one of the active components. It is ubiquitous now. We're finding contamination of glyphosate in, for instance, organic products. Part of this is probably from drift, from wind, you know, neighboring farms. Part of it is also because glyphosate has found its way into the water supply. So glyphosate is water soluble, meaning obviously it's going to dissolve in water. Water is a great carrier for it. So So it's in our water supply, so it's important to filter your water. But one of the other problems with it being water soluble is that if you ingest glyphosate, it gets into your bloodstream and it can travel throughout your body. And just like we know that glyphosate can actually cause increased intestinal permeability or leaky gut. All right. So we know it does that. And we know leaky gut can lead to any chronic or autoimmune disease. All right. We already know that connection. Science has confirmed it. But what's a newer revelation is that just like glyphosate can cause leaky gut in the gastrointestinal tract, it can cause leaky brain. So glyphosate can travel through your bloodstream because it is water soluble, and then it can get into your brain. And the dangerous part about that, or one of the dangerous parts, is that glyphosate is a metal chelator, which means it grabs onto metals. So it can bring heavy metals into the brain. So this is one connection of how we think we're having more incidence of, for instance, autism or ADHD, people with brain fog, learning disabilities in general. We think Alzheimer's, glyphosate is a contributor to, or can be a contributor to, all of those conditions. Glyphosate itself is also a patented antibiotic. So each time that you ingest foods that contain glyphosate or glyphosate residues on it, you are ingesting an antibiotic. And as you mentioned, the gut houses, anywhere between 70 and 80% of your immune system. Part of that immune system is your microbiome that's in your gut. We have more microbes in our body than we have human cells. So we are dependent on these microbes for our health. We actually know that these microbes are critical in regulating every single system in our body. And when you can ingest foods that are antibiotics, or that have antibiotics on them, like glyphosate, you are killing off your immune system because you're killing off the microbes. And as you alluded to, as you stated, it's absolutely true that not only are some crops sprayed with glyphosate, lots of crops are sprayed with glyphosate, but glyphosate is actually used as a desiccant. So it's used to bring crops to harvest sooner. So you can spray it on the crop and it makes it dry, for instance, sooner and more uniformly, so they can bring it to market sooner. So yes, there's going to be less time between spraying it and bringing it to market, which means some studies are showing there are higher quantities of glyphosate and its breakdown products on those foods, such as like even beans. It's not just wheat. It's a whole group of foods. I think it's beans. I think it's peas, maybe even oats. And this is one reason why we're seeing higher levels of it showing up in our food supply. The people who are testing it are actually third-party organizations like the Detox Project, the Environmental Working Group. They're spending the money to test products in the grocery store to see just how much glyphosate we're actually consuming. And the levels are just alarming.
Well, let's take our second break because I feel like we're being hoodwinked. They're supposed to be protecting us, but these government entities are not working in our favor. And ultimately, we're going to have to take our power back on this if we want to stay healthy. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Dr. McCullough. And people can go to your podcast, and I found it on Apple, one of the podcasts, which I find fascinating, How to Find an Authentic Food Supply, which I want to discuss with you next. But it's Beyond Labels with Joe Salatin and Dr. Sina McCullough. Is that the name of the podcast?
Yes, it's Beyond Labels.
Mm-hmm. Well, before the break, you really got into the lack of oversight, sounds like, and the lack of regard for our health. And, our healthcare system has got a lot of problems. And where I'm seeing commercials day in and day out for these immune suppressant monoclonal antibody treatments of various autoimmune diseases. And that's not the answer. The answer seems to be to watch what you eat, clean your system out, and like reset it. And one of the things that we just talked about was how do you find good food? But there's ways, isn't there? I mean, you can have a relationship with farmers. It sounds like you can be a lot more proactive in cutting the middleman out and having a relationship with farmers in your area so that you can actually know who's growing your food. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. And nowadays, it's more accessible to buy food from farmers that you trust than it has been for many decades. So the way that I promote trusting your food supply or building trust in your food supply is by finding your local farmers and vetting them. So you want to find local farmers that are aligned with your principles. And if you don't have local farmers that are aligned with those principles, so for instance, my principles are, no GMOs, you're not spraying any chemicals, you're not giving the animals, for instance, antibiotics, and preferably you're not vaccinating the animals. That's kind of a condensed version of what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Preferably, I want a regenerative farm to provide my food supply, because you want to consume as much regeneratively grown or regeneratively raised food as possible, because that builds the soil. So there's going to be a more robust microbiome on those foods. So you can do that by finding your local farmers and vetting them. If you live in an area where you don't have local farmers, because, some people don't, they have to drive, hours to go to a farm. Nowadays, it's really easy to still procure this food, because a lot of these farms mail food, right? You can order it online and have it shipped to your doorstep. So there's some great farms out there, like Polyface Farm delivers food across the U.S. There's a farm I really love in Idaho. It's called Elder Spring Ranch. A great guy, Glenn Elzinga. He has what's been rated like the best meat. I think it might have the New York Times. I'm not sure. Rated like his hamburger and one of his ribeyes like the best meat in America. Hmm. And both of those places deliver. There's lots of places now that you can go online, super convenient, and just place an order and have it delivered to your doorstep. You just want to make sure that you have vetted each of the people. So if it's not one of those two, I've vetted those two, so I know those are good. But if you have one of your local farmer, or you're going to call at the farm that has an online service, then you do want to ask them those types of questions. Like, do you use GMO seeds? Do you spray pesticides or herbicides on your property? Are you giving your animals antibiotics or any kind of regular, medications? Things like, things like that, some simple questions to start with. And you'll start getting a feel for the farmers and which ones you want to trust, which ones you think, okay, they're not being forthcoming with the answers. If they're not transparent, I would move on to the next farm, right? You want to procure your food from a farmer or a rancher who is 100% transparent. Like the farms that I promote, by promote, I mean I support them with my dollars. They have a 24/7 policy. You can go on that farm any time of the day or night, and you can walk around, you can ask people questions, whatnot. You're welcome there. And to me, that's important, because it means they're not trying to hide something. Mm-hmm. So those are just some quick tidbits of how you can find or increase trust in your food supply. It's really difficult to do that in the grocery store, even though sometimes you do have some local farmers that are able to get some produce or meat into the grocery store. But as you can see from the example we went over with the organic label itself, it is harder to trust the foods in the grocery store.
Absolutely. Now, I want to go back to the beginning of our conversation when you healed yourself from your various autoimmune issues. I mean, we just talked about the importance of the food. What do you think was the trigger for your, I know that your GI tract didn't work very well, but was it inflammation? Was it poorly digested food? What do you think started this cascade in your instance?
So if we go back to what started it, that one is more of it. This started in utero. My mother was very stressed during the pregnancy. And so through, we know through epigenetics, for instance, that switched on different types of inflammatory genes in my own genome. So technically, I would say let's go all the way back to utero. And you can even, you know, if you study the biofield, for instance, you can go back generations before that and tease out that we all have these different energetic imprints on our biofield that are passed down from generation to generation. And those actually can reset your HPA axis, for instance, to make you more triggered by stress, for instance, mm-hmm. so that you go into fight or flight more often. We know fight or flight is a definite trigger for any chronic or autoimmune disease. And we think that most of us spend roughly 70% of our day in fight or flight. So those are all conditions upon which I was born. But in terms of food itself, one of my biggest triggers was actually grain. And I couldn't figure it out for a long time because I was eating gluten-free foods and certified gluten-free foods, you know, from the grocery store, for instance. Mm-hmm. And I would get better for a little bit, and then I would get worse. And so it would lead me to logically conclude, okay, maybe it's not gluten, you know, because now I'm worse. But what I didn't realize was that gluten-free label is actually another label lie. Like, it actually also has loopholes in it. The gluten-free label only considers wheat, barley, and rye to contain gluten. So any other food, any other ingredient that does actually have gluten in it, the food can still contain that ingredient and it can still legally be labeled as gluten-free. So for instance, we know that corn and rice contain forms of gluten, all right? So let me take one step back and say that we know there's not just one form of gluten, all right? The gliadin is the form of gluten in wheat and also in barley and rye, you can find gliadin. That is the gluten that was used as the basis for the gluten-free government label. Okay, so now we know that there are hundreds or possibly thousands of different forms of gluten, and they're in all grains, so they're in corn and rice as well. And this knowledge is freely available, but the FDA won't change the definition of gluten in terms of the label. They're sticking with that original definition of wheat, barley, and rye, which actually dates back to World War II. So they have not updated the science. So what that means is that when you are trusting that gluten-free label and you're eating those gluten-free foods, you are actually still consuming gluten in the form of rice and corn. And for some people, those forms of gluten, they have more severe reactions to them than the alpha-gliadin that's in wheat. So that was a big part of my problem, was I didn't realize that I was still eating gluten, even though we got tested and I knew that I had non-celiac gluten sensitivity. So that was one of my biggest triggers. And I find that that's one of the biggest mistakes that people make mm-hmm. is that they, like I did, they trust that label. And for a lot of us, it keeps us sick.
Well, I have a question just so I can tease out. Is this a sensitivity? Is it an immune response or is it an allergy?
So you can have any of the above, right? So some people do have gluten intolerance, and some people will have the sensitivity to it. Some people will carry a specific HLA-DQ genotype that if they continue to consume the gluten, it's a sensitivity, but if they continue eating the gluten, it will develop into celiac disease. So I have that genotype that, right now it's a sensitivity, and I was fortunate that I figured it out in plenty of time that it did not turn into celiac disease. But yes, it can gluten, the reaction of the body to gluten is very complicated, and it could be any of those categories that you just mentioned.
I didn't realize that. So from the treatment standpoint, let's use you as an example. Are you able to eat these foods now? Do you take a digestive enzyme? How are you working around this so that you've healed yourself?
So I have been completely grain-free for about I would say about 6 years. So the way that I was able to heal myself, healing is like peeling back the layers of an onion, right? Like reversing the disease fully. It has many layers to it. The gluten aspect was one of the layers. So in order to heal that layer, I had to remove every single source of gluten, which means every single source of grain. So not only in my foods, and that's really hard for people. You know, it was really hard for me, and I'm trained in the field of nutrition, right? Mm-hmm. You have to think of every single food, every spice. You know, a lot of times spices will have fillers in them, like rice flour, for instance. So every single spice has to be evaluated as well. Every single personal care product, you know, it's like everything I put on my body, it has to be totally grain-free. You know, if I was going to wear makeup, I mean, luckily I don't really, but if I was going to go give a talk, I put a little eyeliner on. And so I had to make sure that didn't have any grain in it. You know, wow. My mouthwash, I make my own toothpaste now because most toothpaste contains some form of grain derivative in them. Mm-hmm. If I'm ever going to consume like supplements, for instance, I have to vet them and make sure there's no grain. So going 100% grain-free all of the time was a big factor in my success in fully reversing the disease.
Wow, that's amazing. Let's take our last break because I want to delve into this again. This is a life-changing pursuit. You can't half do this if you expect to be healthy. So let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Dr. McCullough, and people can go to Amazon to get your books. And there are two that, you know, that I think that people would actually really need to think about and use. One is Hands Off My Food, and then there's Beyond Labels. And the podcast is a wealth of information. I'm looking at one of the episodes that we talked about, how to find authentic food supply, and there's all these websites. So you have lots of information that people can go and look it up for themselves, and guides that people can use, like shopping guide from a place called westonprice.org. And people, I'll put the link in at the end of the show so that people can go and do this. But before the break, you know, you were very clear about you can't half do this. I had no idea that cosmetics and other things would include toothpaste. Who thinks of this? You always think of just the food itself. But with this knowledge, taking all these things out of your system, is this what stops the inflammatory? Because once you make an autoimmune antibody, does it go away? Because you said your rheumatoid arthritis markers all disappeared. So am I thinking about this correctly? Is if you stop assaulting the system, the body will clean these things out. Is that what happened?
That's absolutely accurate. Yes. The body has an amazing ability to regenerate itself. And we know this. Even Western medicine acknowledges this, right, with the discovery of stem cells, for instance. So we used to teach in our universities, and I was taught this, that certain organs like the brain and the liver did not actually regenerate, right? That was it. You know, you're going to kill off those brain cells. If, you know, like if you go drink alcohol, one of my professors say that. She'd be like, don't go on an alcohol binge. You're going to kill off your brain cells. They don't come back, you know? But now we know that's actually not true. Every single cell, every single system in your body has the ability to regenerate itself. And we know this in part from the discovery of stem cells. So it is true, it can heal. What you have to do is provide it within the environment in which it can heal. So I have kind of this simplistic view over, it's a simplistic overview that goes into depth, right? Like you said, the many layers of the onion. But the simplistic overview of how we actually develop these chronic and autoimmune diseases is that number one, toxicity, and number two, deficiencies. So toxicities, that one's pretty easy, right? If you're consuming, for instance, the gluten, grains were a toxic thing for me. Other foods that you might be sensitive to or allergic to, heavy metals, for instance, too many pesticides in the diet, you're consuming too many antibiotics in your food supply, which is quite rampant. Plastics in the food, I mean, you'd be surprised at how much plastic people eat in their food supply. You know, getting exposed to plastics from the way that food is stored, mm-hmm. like in, you know, plastic Tupperware dishes or warmed up drinking bottled water, all of those are toxins to the body. On the flip side of that is deficiencies. So if you eat a lot of processed foods, for instance, you're probably deficient in at least some nutrients, some micronutrients, definitely in some phytonutrients, which help to heal the body. So deficiencies in vitamins and minerals, and a big one is deficiencies in, if you will, love and acceptance. So the ability to love and accept yourself for who you are. And this is a whole nother big topic, but this is actually at the root cause of many people's illness is not feeling loved and accepted. Another deficiency is community, right? Community is one of the major predictors of wellness and longevity. So a lot of us have been having a hard time, right, over the last couple years at least, with feeling disconnected from community. And so that itself can fuel disease. So you have toxicities and you have deficiencies. Once you address those, you come back into balance. Mm-hmm. And that's what the body has the ability to do, what it innately can do, and that is to heal any type of disease.
Now, before, at the beginning, we talked about how you had workups where you had blood work done. It didn't pick up anything because it's so, it's a gross instrument. It doesn't pick up fine detail. What do you recommend for folks to do who are really trying to get a handle on it? What are your deficiencies? Is there any kind of testing, heavy metal testing, or something that you recommend that people start, you know, from stage one to figure out what the major problem is? Because it could be anything. It's kind of hard to get your foot in the door to figure out, you know, where do you start?
Yeah. And that's the number one question, right? When I'm working with clients, either one-on-one or through my Go Well program, it's where do you start? Each person needs to start at a place that's right for them. It's easier for me to identify that when I'm speaking to the person, mm-hmm. all right? Because I can sense, you know, through energies and stuff, you can sense what the body needs. But one way that you can start, for instance, if you want to know if you're deficient in vitamins and minerals, it's don't do the test that most Western medicine doctors have access to, right? If you walk in one of their office, because that test is usually a snapshot of what's in the blood at that time. Mm-hmm. And many vitamins and minerals do not work that way, right? They're not at an equilibrium with the tissues. So if you test it in the blood, it's like, oh, okay, well, that's how much I have in my system, that's working inside myself. It doesn't work that way. So what I did was I went outside of the doctor's office and I purchased what's called a functional test. And I purchased that micronutrient test from SpectraCell. And you can purchase it yourself, actually right on their website without a doctor's prescription. And basically you just pay for it. They send you the kit. You go get your blood drawn. You send the kit back and they send you the test results. And so it's a functional test, meaning that it's actually going to take the white blood cells and it's going to add, for instance, a nutrient to it. So like magnesium, for instance, and it will see how many times that cell can replicate, as an example. So it's actually measuring the function mm-hmm. of the cell as opposed to a snapshot.
That's really good. I mean, that's real life in real time. Now, I'm curious more about your Go Wild program. Is this something that people who are not living in your state can use your services or engage your services?
Oh, yeah. My consultations are over Zoom, and the Go Wild program is online. Mm-hmm. So, and it's actually, I created that program because I never actually had the intention to work with clients. I just went on a book tour for, you know, trying to get the word out about the food supply. That was when I wrote Hands Off My Food. And it was amazing because, you know, I'm like, I'm just a homeschool mom and I don't name for myself or anything, but word spread about my healing journey. And so I would go and speak about my book, and afterwards, pretty much every single person would come, like, rush over to me and share a similar story, but they hadn't healed yet. They were all sick. And so it was like one talk. I was going on talks, like, you know, every week or something. It was pretty exhausting, but, you know, but I had made that promise to God that that's what I would do. So I just kept going. So after, you know, one talk after the next, people just kept coming up and telling me they were sick and asking if I could help them. And I kept saying, oh, I don't do consults. I don't work with people, you know? Mm-hmm. And then one day I realized, wait a minute. Well, that was me, right? So I can't turn people away, because what if that was me back in the day and somebody said, oh, I was able to heal. And then I'm like, oh, I'm not going to help you heal. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So I said, I'll start doing something, right? Maybe this is where God wants me to go. Well, I had so many people wanting one-on-one consultations that, number one, I couldn't keep doing it with my homeschooling schedule. It was too many people. It was turning into a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And number two, I realized, just like my journey, many of these people had already spent thousands and thousands of dollars, right? They didn't have any more money. So I said, well, let me create a win-win situation. Let me create an online version, which takes less of my time once it's done. And it gives you all the steps that you need. And it's really inexpensive, you know, compared to going on these consults for a consultation.
Yeah.
And what I've done is I've created that program. You can move through it at your own pace. And then, and there's a cookbook in there. There's cooking videos. There's all the steps, the lab tests, if you want to do them, all of it. And then I also do a monthly live Q&A session. So every month we get together and they can ask me any kind of questions that they want. And then each week I also send out different emails.
Well, that sounds wonderful. I mean, I'm going to have to refer some of my patients to you, that program, because I just feel like they're treating the symptom and not the problem. They come in on a shopping bags full of medication and they're still not better, but I'm seeing them for infections that got, you know, it suppresses their immune system. So their infections are popping up. But we need to get to the root cause. I think I'm really against people being on more medicine, but people are sicker. That's got to stop. And you are a wealth of information. I'm just so pleased and blessed that I found, you know, my producer found you to have this conversation, because we have so much power and there's so many things that we can do. And unfortunately, the show is so short. I want to make sure that people get all of your information. How can they listen to your podcast? How can they go find your Go Wild online program, your books? So I want to make sure people, you have time to say all of that. So I give you the floor so you can let people know.
Oh, that's so kind of you. So you can go to my website, drsinamccullough.com, and all the information is there for you.
And all the books and everything else is all in one spot then?
Yes, links to the books, to my program, to the podcast, it's all right there.
Oh, I love it. One-stop shop. So
that's right. I try to make it simple, you know? Like, simple is better, I learned.
Exactly. Don't create a, you know, the wheel kind of thing. So Dr. McCullough, thank you so much for joining me today. I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I'm looking forward to putting most of this back into practice and to be able to now shop with an education that I didn't have before. I want to thank you. You're a blessing. Thank you for all you do.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity. And I'd love to have you on our show sometime if you're available.
Absolutely. And I also want to invite you back. If there's anything new or you want to get out there, you're more than welcome to come back. But I'll be contacting you so we can connect.
That would be great. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.